present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with an item from the Times interface section, read by Charlotte Green.
Conservative MP seeks resourceful, resilient, intelligent and independent secretary to run busy Commons office. Ideally, house-trained.
Thanks to Jane Plowman of Aylesbury for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton, and newcomer to the news quiz, comedian Hattie Heyridge. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Roy Hattersley. Andy, who's been turning the grey revolution red?
Well, this is spy mania, presumably. It's been a week of worrying about why MI5, MI6 couldn't catch any spies, and why, when they did, they didn't bother to mention it to anybody. I think this whole atmosphere of coming clean, though, now that the Cold War is over, is good, and I think the climate is now right for me to reveal that... that I am the infamous 947th man, a crucial cog in, trained in the ways of love by the KGB.
There's some classified information from one of Chris Andrews' books, which ought to get a wider coverage because it demonstrates the superiority of the island race. In 1902, Riddle of the Sand, German warships menacing Britain, Foreign Office scientists discovered that the best way of constructing invisible ink was to mix soot and human semen. And the Foreign Secretary of the day decided it wasn't a formula that one gentleman could recommend to another.
The Foreign Secretary of today probably could.
You could probably send him up a chimney, he could do both at the same time.
In 1975, we had a filing clerk in the NATO office in Brussels, a filing clerk, who bought a Rolls-Royce, a yacht, and a castle in the Ardennes. And this roused some suspicions. So after much agony, they decided to raid the castle in the Ardennes and found on the top floor a locked door, which the Belgian police bravely broke down. And the policemen were all driven down the stairs by an avalanche of plastic cups and saucers. His wife was the Tupperware representative for Brussels. And that's where the money came from.
A trawl through secretly copied KGB files revealed that half Britain's pension queues are filled with former Soviet agents. Britons were shocked to discover that grandparents who kept saying things like, "I fought for the likes of you in the war," were actually on the other side all the time. 2 points to Andy. Hattie, welcome to the news quiz.
Thank you very much.
Whose keynote conference speech went from bad to verse?
Oh, Tony Blair going on to that odeness, wasn't he? Copying Andrew Motion and thinking he had to make a poem up. I don't know if he... Did he write it or someone else write it?
No. Campbell is doing his best to shaft old Blair, isn't he? He pushes Blair out of the limelight with this rubbish in order to destroy him. It's very unsettling, I think. Yeah, I think these spin doctors are all getting rather dodgy. We don't like them, do we?
We don't like them at all, particularly when they try to write poetry.
Well, they write it deliberately badly.
Well, exactly.
It was
a great achievement, because not only was it rubbish, but it was offensive rubbish. And what is it that makes a Prime Minister go to a conference as their guest and decide to entertain them with offensive rubbish for 2 minutes? It's quite...
Not a limerick or anything, was it?
The joyous thing about that conference for me actually was John Monks. I say joyous, cautiously. But John Monks saying that they are deliberately turning their back on the cloth cap image. He doesn't understand about cloth caps. New Labour is all about cloth caps, barbers, green Wellingtons, and all that. Cloth cap is back. They are seeking the cloth cap image.
The poem exposed the weaknesses of Blair's writing and delivery on three fronts: education. Roy, whose ethical foreign policy was looking decidedly hawkish?
Well, it must be Mr. Cook, that great man. But why has Lurkling decided, he's not going to sell any aeroplanes to all those ghastly people? who were doing so much damage in East Timor. And it's very difficult to think of a joke about that hideous situation. So we just ought to congratulate Robin on coming slightly belatedly to the decision not to sell the aircraft.
Well, there's a slightly more detail, something that emerged this week.
What about the Hawk?
No.
About all the departments arguing?
Yes.
Oh! Really?
That's surely 2.3 points for our first appearance as well.
The Treasury, Department of Trade and the Foreign Office all got different interests. Department of Trade wanting to sell anything, Treasury wanting to keep as much money away from everybody else as possible, and the Foreign Office wanting to be as nice to everyone as they can,
well, this
apparently.
Is not Hawks, it's not airplanes. This is Mr. Stephen Byatt, who was criticised for selling some very complicated equipment and defended the decision to do so by saying he didn't see why the poor people of the country should suffer because we didn't approve of their government. Not a view we've been operating in our dealings with Iraq over the last 2 or 3 years.
Right about it being hard to be funny about it, but there was one moment of black comedy. Did you see the Indonesian general in charge of the Indonesian forces in East Timor gave a press conference and he burst into a rendition of Feelings. Suddenly, and the BBC reporter then said, wonderfully said, for some reason, the general, having justified the continued presence in East Timor, went into a rendition of Feelings. It was a great moment of BBC understatement. He's saying, I think he thought he was at a wedding reception or something.
Very. We'll invite him to the TUC next year.
Question concerned the revelation that £130 million of public money had been used to help the Indonesian government, accused of widespread atrocities. The Australian general leading the peacekeeping force denied claims that some of his soldiers were gung-ho, saying, we don't let anyone with funny, chinky names get into the Australian army. So 2 points to Roy for getting the answer and an extra point to Hattie for getting it right. Alan, listen to this.
Two little boys had two little toys. Each had a wooden horse.
Who was right on target, Alan, for being London's numero uno?
Yes, I thought it was these two little boys. I did a column about this during the week. It's like the Ferris wheel falling over. Ferris wheel is the icon of New London. It is a fun fair, and we need clowns. And we have these two bizarre people, one of them so truthful that he disqualifies himself from being a mayor, and the other one so economical with the truth. And I think... I can't go into that, but it does seem extraordinary. The Tory selection process, given the number of people you've got and the quality of the people you've got, you think if Dick Whittington returned, they'd probably elect the cat.
There's another moment of great black comedy, though, which was Stephen Norris leaving his microphone on and being filmed saying to somebody, there is no way I'd vote for Archer alive or dead. And then, moments later, turning around and saying, yes, I did say that, but it's been taken out of context.
Lord Archer emerged as a strong favourite to be Tory candidate for London Mayor as he and Steve Norris went forward to the last round. In his speech, Lord Archer described himself as the only candidate with the right qualifications, though doubts were later cast on how authentic his claim of a BA honours in how to be a mayor really was. Steve Norris, on the other hand, insists that voting for him as mayor would have great advantages, as there'd be absolutely no shortage of lady mayoresses. So at the end of round one, the scores are thrillingly Alan and Roy 4, but Andy and Hattie just in the lead with 5. And before we start round two, here's a clipping from The Scotsman.
A Swede arrested for theft is suing the state for failing to prevent him trying to escape custody. Jimmy Harkinson claims that if the two police officers assigned to guard him had done their job, he wouldn't have been able to leap through a courthouse window and break his foot.
Thanks to Alison Park on the island of Benbecula for that. Andy, who's come out of his brown study to announce that we've never had it so good.
That's a hard one, my word.
Excuse me, did I say Andy?
You're thrown because we're 1 point ahead at the end of the first round. You're bottling it, I can tell.
I'm not one of your gentlemen contestants, you know, prepared to go down the line.
Could this possibly be about the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Simon?
Nope. Roy? Of course he is.
Did, you see my face then? I didn't think that was very funny. So. Yes, this is Gordon Brown's speech about how the economy is in wonderful shape. And apparently we are now being referred to as a Goldilocks economy because it's not too hot and it's not too cold. But I can't remember what happened to Goldilocks at the end of that story. The bears eat her. I don't know. It's all a bit murky.
Like Jonathan Aitken, she got the porridge.
Anyway, so it's all wonderful. Inflation is at minus 42% and growth is at infinity, according to Treasury forecasts. Very good news for us all. Can I just say, if I look a bit distracted, that's because there is a definite whiff of gin in my water. Have you got it? I always worry about people putting things in my water because that's what they did in the prison. It's only me, then. There's something industrial in my water.
Roy, you're a great fan of Gordon Brown, aren't you?
I'm a great fan of Gordon Brown, and I understand exactly where the gin's come from, thanks to Tony Blair, who has waved his hand over it.
I thought this water had been passed by the BBC Director General.
Oh, no, he passes Perrier. Chancellor said he won't gamble with the economy, despite Robin Cook's constant prompting to put it all on the 442 at Wincanton. Earlier in the week, the government announced that inflation has fallen to its lowest rate since 1963. Of course, back in those days, a humble East Ender could buy the whole Metropolitan Police Force and still have change from a fiver. 2 points to Andy. Hattie, why are the knives up for Hillary Clinton?
Ah, Hillary Clinton wants to become a senator in New York, so obviously she's got to have a facelift, because it doesn't matter what she's saying, she's just got to look right for the telly. So apparently she's got worry lines, which is no surprise, really, is it? It's one way of getting rid of them, that's to get rid of her husband, I think. Really.
Do you ever have a facelift? For politics. Another transmogrification.
Do you think I would look as keen and handsome and hawk-like and chisel-faced as this, if it were just nature?
You sigh, you look a bit like Stephen Norris.
The one thing I admit to is a hair transplant, Alan.
Thanks.
I rather wondered where mine had gone. I think the barber sold it in a good cause. Yeah.
The president's wife is launching her own political career, standing in New York against the Republican mayor, Rudy Giuliani. He's best known for taking on the Mafia, another organisation renowned for rearranging people's faces. 2 points to Hattie. Roy, listen to this. The Story of the Blues by Wah. Roy, who totally CFUK'd up?
I'm reluctant to answer this question in case I get it wrong, so to speak, slightly wrong. This is the young Conservatives who've discovered a new acronym, not acronym, but initials for themselves, which, if you read it very quickly, looks extremely rude. But there's great consternation amongst the more respectable sections of the Conservative Party that these initials, which are something like KUC...
CFUK.
Are you sure?
I'm certain. I know it because even I know the young Conservatives can't even spell f***.
Those initials that Alan spelt out with reckless daring and much assistance from his scriptwriters are those which the young Conservative adopted.
I'm going to write in to complain about what you just said next week, Alan.
First time in 25 years I could actually get away with saying on this programme what I've thought for 25 years. We probably can, because there's no other way of pronouncing that word when you see CFUK written down.
And for an extra point, I explain that it's not even original, because a commercial firm has rearranged the word previously, so they've stolen it from a not very successful commodity.
Well, for an extra point, I'll say it was Benetton.
No, for an extra point, I will say it's the French Connection. Because I thought that immediately.
All right, then I'll withdraw my extra point.
CFUK. Oh, what?
So that's 2 points for us and one yes. deducted for him for getting it wrong.
I'm impounding all the extra points and awarding them to myself. I'm awarding them to Charlotte, because she never gets any points. It was the news that the Conservative Future, formerly the Young Conservatives, is risking legal action and the wrath of senior party officials by adopting the slogan CFUK for a student recruiting drive. Spokesman of Conservative Future said there hadn't been this much interest in Tory student members since Michael Portillo's interview in The Times.
Oh, no.
So the scores at the end of round two are Alan and Roy 8, but Andy and Hattie clinging to the lead with 9 points. And we start round three with a cutting from Caravan Mart.
The toilet waste master takes wastewater and toilet cassette to the disposal point in one trip. With full capacity 38-litre load, it slides under most caravans and has a bottom-emptying outlet.
Thanks to Angela Neal of London for that. Andy was caught up with behaviour that certainly wasn't cricket.
I want to know why Charlotte got the giggles on the phrase full capacity 38-litre load. I think that's something from her private life. In a week of high comedy, I think the prize must go to the people who thought they would bribe the English cricket team to play badly.
Well, I think the English team missed a golden opportunity. They should have all put their hands up to it. It would have explained everything, wouldn't it? And we would have loved them. Yeah, I took the money. That's why we're crap.
Police say they've been aware for some time of the existence of a shadowy group of individuals hell-bent on doing whatever it took to ensure that England lose every test match. But there's not a lot they can do about the board of selectors. 2 points to Andy Hattie. Listen to this. Hattie, why shouldn't we be flying home this particular Christmas?
Ah, well, not on the Millennium Ferris wheel, certainly won't be. And we shouldn't be on planes either, apparently. Apparently everywhere apart from Britain, of course, everywhere else is too dangerous. We have to fly over foreign parts, they don't understand it.
Except in China, where everybody's as safe as houses, because the government has insisted that all the executives of China Airlines should be in the air at midnight. Wouldn't it be wonderful if it happened here, sort of Richard Branson in perpetual motion?
I think it was a bad week for the British airline industry to get on its high horse about how safe it is, given that a Britannia Airways flight bounced across a field and broke into three parts. And there's a wonderful quote from an official who said, well, they weren't actually ever in any danger, although I'm sure it was an unusual experience. I'm sure it was an unusual experience for them. They
really
probably hadn't done that before.
Yes, the Millennium Bug Watchdog Task Force 2000 has warned that no one should fly abroad for 5 weeks either side of Christmas and the New Year period. Government said there's little chance of people endangering themselves by travelling abroad over the millennium, mainly because most of them won't get their passports before April 2002.
It isn't dangerous for people, it's just that your luggage will arrive in 1934.
Alan, who's decided to call time on his real ale-drinking detective?
Oh, it's really sad. The book is called The Remorseful Day, with all its puns, and it's a morseless day. It is Colin Dexter, who has decided to chuck in the sponge, and he's written the last Morse book, which is called The Remorseful Day, in which Morse dies and asks to be remembered to Lewis, which is very sad.
And the nurse doesn't hear, does she?
The nurse doesn't hear. We've ruined it. The Daily Telegraph ruined it for everybody by telling what happened. Which is rare for the Daily Telegraph, but it actually told, it told the truth about fiction rather than the other way around. But I cannot go on. I'm jolly sad.
I'm devastated. I love Morse. And also, with no Morse, if there's only Lewis there, you know, half an hour into the show, who will get the wrong one? It'll all be down to Lewis.
I think you should be so depressed about the series ending, because the series Morse can go on without Morse. I mean, Taggart died 3 years ago, but the Taggart series is still going on. I mean, it could sort of be a Corran series long after Corran's usefulness.
We are in it.
We're in it. I hope you take that point in the subtle way I made it, but I should have known better.
Author Colin Dexter said the only ways Morse could have made his exit were retirement, marriage, failure or nervous breakdown, unlike real policemen who have the option of an investigation followed by an early pension on grounds of ill health. Friends said Tony Blair would miss the thought of the grumbling old curmudgeon driving around in his big red Jag, which is why he still hasn't the heart to tell John Prescott he's been sacked. Scores at the end of round three are Alan and Roy 12, but Andy and Hattie still in the lead with 13 points. So that Ford Mondeo still to play for in the final round. Andy, your piece of music. They say Tim Rice couldn't write lyrics. The Nuns Chorus from The Sound of Music. Who proved to be second to none, Andy, for the big money giveaway?
It's a story about nuns.
It is.
As in...
We know it.
Do you know why they're called nuns? Because they get none. cut that. That's a very old, horrible joke. You'll be able to tell it apart from me, other jokes. But what's this story then, Hattie?
Is it about the nuns that have got some land in Sussex?
Yes.
It's worth 26 million quid.
It is.
And they're selling off the land for a housing estate or something, but they can't have the money because they've got a vow of poverty. So have I inadvertently, but there you go. Yeah, so people are going to get the money without knowing where it's come from.
All right. Have you got their address?
Yeah.
Definitely cut that nun. I've always been a great admirer of nuns. When
they speak very highly of you.
Yes, they do. I remember one of the embarrassing moments that one of our children gave us was we were on a beach in France and some nuns were walking along the beach and our boy Pip, who was about three, jumped up, pointed at them and shouted, "Look, witches!" Cut that bit as well, because that might influence their decision.
They're subservient, they're clad in black and white, and they're valued at 26 million, something Rude Hullet never managed at Newcastle. 2 points to Andy, or rather 2 points to Hattie. Roy, where was it confirmed that every dog has its day in court?
A dog story?
A dog story. Oh, don't plug your bloody
book. Don't appear in my book, which is out on paperback this week. But this is a dog which was wrongly accused of an offence, as dogs often are. This was wrongly accused of biting a fella. And rather than just plead guilty and pay a small fine, its owner brought him to court to demonstrate that the accusation had been against a brown and white dog, whereas the dog in question, the accused, was black and white. But that's not the best part of the story. The best part of the story is the dog having shown his true colours, to coin a phrase, then approached the bench, rolled over on his back and kicked his legs in the air, which I hope is going to become a feature of Crown Court prosecutions throughout the land.
Bully a Staffordshire Bull Terrier was cleared of the charge of being a dangerous dog when allowed to make an appearance in court. The court officials were delighted by the antics of a lovable scamp who insisted on rolling over, kicking his legs in the air and having his belly rubbed by all and sundry, saying this is one judge who really knows how to enjoy the lunch break. Despite witnesses describing the dog running from the scene as brown, local police still arrested Bully, who is black. So no doubt long and successful careers await them in the Metropolitan Police. 2 points to Roy. Alan, which grumpy old beast got its end away by whipping its end away?
Apparently the dinosaurs, in order to impress women, took their tails out. And lacking an office Xerox machine or whatever, they just waved them at one another. And the one with the biggest tail got the woman, dinosaur. I'm sorry to anthropomorphise this, especially as there weren't any anthropos around at the time. But they just did this, and eventually they became extinct, presumably because their tails got smaller and smaller. Or the women said, "For God's sake, you call that a tail?" I don't know why, but that's what happened. They became extinct through waving their tails about.
Is it my imagination, or are we getting more and more revelations about the dinosaurs every week? I think the dinosaurs have got an agent.
Scientists have made a whole range of new discoveries about the sex lives of dinosaurs by studying a number of fossils and spending a couple of nights at the Tory conference. Before we reveal the final exciting scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Right, well, this is from Mr. Banner of Yateley and Hants. I read it as a warning about the importance of choosing your friends carefully. A confused donkey got over-friendly with a spectator at an agricultural show. The jack donkey rushed towards a large man displaying a builder's crack from his trousers as he leant over railings. Towing his woman owner behind him, the donkey mounted the terrified man at the Great Yorkshire Show. A witness said the man was pinned by the donkey's forelegs and it started to bite his neck. His mates were in heaps of laughter.
This is from Mrs. L. Fisher of Evesham, and it's in the Vale Advertiser. Children eat free. Two adults eating will have two children to eat free. Not to be used in conjunction with any other offer.
Right.
This is from the Sunday Post. Annette McGilbert is a taxi driver in Aberdeen. She's a gypsy stock with a typically Romany feeling for nature. So when she spotted a toad in the middle of a built-up area, she stopped the car and got out, picked it up and put it down on an old rag in the small tray next to the gear stick. And shortly afterwards, Annette picked up a fare, who was not only drunk but abusive. And when he looked as if he might become violent, Annette said, "I'm a gypsy. If you don't shut up, I'll do what I did to him." The drunk apologised, begged for forgiveness, and gave her a handsome tip.
Alan.
Survival magazine monthly. It says, to milk a polar bear. You first lure it into a meat-baited snare. Once it is in the snare, which does the beast no harm, you shoot an anaesthetic dart into it. Within 10 to 15 minutes, the animal is harmless, and you can milk it the way you would any other bear.
Sure, now let's look at the final scores, which are Alan and Roy 16, but Andy and Hattie just in the lead, our winners this week, with 17 points. And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Andy Hamilton, Roy Hattersley and Hattie Heyridge. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.